Okay, let's start with a content notification, shall we? The Queer Conjure podcast is about queer people, trans people, witches, neurodivergent people, you know, marginalized people who have experienced a wide spectrum of community pleasure and structural harm. We're going to talk about all of it, the magical, the joyful, the painful. We are embracing the light as well as the shadows. If that doesn't sound like what you're up for right now, I invite you to move on to another podcast. Have fun. If it is something you want to listen to right now, get cozy, babies, because here we go. Hey, queer witches. Welcome to the Queer Conjure Podcast. I am your host, Jasper Joy. My pronouns are they, them, or he, him. I am a tarot scholar, a spiritual support witch, a neuroqueer, and, if I do say so myself, a transgender dreamboat. My editor and occasional co-host is Ava the Raven. Their pronouns are they or she or he. Ava is a channeler, earth translator, moss fae, and conduit of organization. QueerConjure.org is queering the path towards magical liberation. We place the T at the beginning of the acronym, become inspired by hearing each other fully living our whole selves, and diligently care for our community using magical practices and open-hearted ethics. Thanks for being here, baby cakes. If you would like to be a supporter on Patreon, it's patreon.com/queerconjure. You'll find lots of extra videos, spells, lunar rituals, as well as discount codes for all the things. Please do share this episode with your friends and maybe take a minute or two to leave a review on Spotify or Apple. Blessed be. Mwah. Hey, I have a question for you. Are you a neuroqueer witch? Fabulous, so are we. We believe there is an inherent sacredness connecting queerness, transness, magic, and neurodivergence. Neuroqueer was originally coined by Nick Walker, PhD, as a verb, a way to subvert ourselves from normativity and heteronormativity simultaneously. Queer Conjure's all about that. Queer Conjure's all about subverting the normative and evoking, that's a word now, magical liberation. So if you are a neuroqueer witch, we want to hear from you. Send us an audio recording up to 4 minutes long describing the ways being a neuroqueer informs your witchcraft. Just email jasperhawthorne@gmail.com, go to queerconjure.org and hit contact us, and give us an attachment of your audio, and we'll share it on the podcast. Blessed be. Mwah. Okay. Hi, Lee.
Oh, it is so good to see you, Jasper. What a delight.
Yeah, it is really nice to see you and hear you for people who won't see the video. Yeah, before we begin, I wanted to name that I've actually been following your work for a while. And then we got to have a tarot class together and we actually got to do a little mini project together. And I was like,
it was so good. Getting to have other people who are nerdy in parallel ways. Mm-hmm. I for folks who are listening at home, if you ever have those humans where it's like you can imagine having 2 hours of coffee with them whenever you're spoiled to get to chat, like I felt we got to have some of that mutually and loved it.
Yeah, I really loved it too. And I just feel like we were well matched when we did partner projects. And yeah, nerding out about tarot gives me the tingles. And when I find other people that feel that way, it's just like tingle city. Yeah, so my partner and I recently made this new workbook, Radiating with Tarot. And we kind of took an essay that you wrote in the book Queer Magic and like, let our imaginations run wild with this idea of interstitial elements. But you know what? Before we jump into that, who are you? What are your pronouns? What are you doing with your life?
Oh, thank you. So my name's Lee Harrington. I'm a sexuality and spirituality educator based out of what is now referred to as Denver, Colorado, which is also the historical land of the Ute, Cheyenne, and Arapaho people. And if folks are ever in Denver, please check out outside of the Denver Art Museum. There's an amazing sculpture that is covered in the names of all of the broken treaties, all of the times when this land was actually stolen. So I encourage people to check that out. I am a nerd about a wide array of things. I've had the chance to get to be a teacher for the last 20 years on everything from choosing and connecting with your own tarot decks to how to have fun tying people up in the bedroom. I never know week to week what's going to be happening in my world. I love it.
I love
And
that.
right, like it's such an adventure. It is such an adventure, and I feel very blessed that this gets to be part of how my life weaves in and on itself. I also have a chance to be an author, and I own a small publishing company, which has been fun. I refer to it as the publishing company for wayward toys at times, because there's just so many places that don't have. Like that don't have somewhere to go, right? So many words that need to be heard. And so Mystic Productions is out of that project. And nowadays, what am I doing? I just got back from getting to teach on queerness and connection and also do a ritual around self-love and self-relationship over in both Berlin as well as in Gothenburg, Sweden, which was an absolute blast. And then go straight from there to getting to lecture on kink and on figuring out your risk profiles in your life in Birmingham, Alabama. So it is such an adventure.
Wow.
And yeah, folks can follow me online. My website is passionandsoul.com. And I'm also on Patreon and all of that kind of stuff. So life is a weird, beautiful adventure that I feel is something that I set myself on a path for 20 years ago, and now is getting to bear fruit from its, adventure tree.
Adventure tree, the fruit of the adventure tree. Yeah, it also sounds like you're in a phase where maybe like some junk food and sweatpants are in order for a while.
It's that's been this last week, and about to head off to the International Parliament for the World Religions in Chicago, which is going to, I mean, the thing is massive. If anybody ever has a chance to go to this experience, it's in a different city and or country every year. I went 12 years ago to the one in
Oh,
Melbourne,
really?
Australia. It blew my heart open. And I'm going to be on a panel discussing the experiences of masculinities in goddess worshiping traditions. Yeah. And for me, my practice in my queerness and in my transness and in my work in tarot, like all of these things overlap into those questions. Where are we in the places that come between? Where am I as somebody who uses a pronoun like he and sometimes a pronoun like they? And sometimes, like I joke that if my high heels are more than 3 inches, use whatever you want.
Yes.
I mean, like it is what it is. It is what it is. And so for me, getting to have those discussions in these spaces and getting to read your workbook and find these magics. that exist when, in the case of tarot, we step outside of a single belief of how things should be read. Or in the case of masculinities, when we stop and look at what are the projections of what masculinity should be, and look instead at like, what did our uncles put on our shoulders and say, this is how you're supposed to do it, right? Or else you're not a real man. These places of the beyond, the between, the collaborative, that is where my heart lights up.
Yeah, the collaborative. And there's so much serendipity in what you just said. So my understanding and relationship with divinity is that, like, I'm having a relationship with divinity, but divinity is also the relationship. Like the way you chose the word interstitial in this essay, we'll talk about. Like, the word interstitial has a lot to do with like these spaces between the cells of our bodies, and like from organ to blood to skin, and like the all those layers of like, yeah, like the interstitial relationships is where divinity is for me. Does that kind of make sense?
I mean, I can imagine it within my body, but I'm curious what that feels like for you. Like what, like how does that manifest for you?
Yeah. How does that manifest for me? The more I try to cultivate awareness about those spaces that divinity fills, the more I have access to like things like self-compassion and self-patience and honoring of like this admirable place of where my healing is at and where my wisdom is at, and just like, yeah, like feeling into those interstitial spaces is just a like a practice of deep grounding and rooting for me. Because then I'm also tapping into like the interstitial places between me and the earth, and then from the earth to all of that energy that exists in the magma of the earth. And like, I could go on and on.
No, I love that. I love
Yeah.
that. I
All
love you
right.
sharing that. Like, that is so rich.
I'm curious why you chose. So we're talking about the queer elements working with interstitial energies in the book Queer Magic: Power Beyond Boundaries. Also, I wanted to mention that there's another book by the same title, Queer Magic, and it
Oh,
was.
and we came out within a month of each other.
Oh,
Neither of
really?
us knew the other existed until they were announced within like weeks of each other on Amazon, etc.
Oh,
None of
wow.
us knew each other were existing. But if people have a chance to read Thomas Prower's book, it's fantastic. But our
Yeah.
books are profoundly different.
Oh, they're profoundly different. Yeah.
Ours was 41 different artists and authors sharing their experiences from across the English and Spanish speaking world, with one also including ancient Icelandic, because that's, there you go. And while Thomas's is like this academic, like, so ours is an anthology with lots of voices and lots of perspectives. And his is coming from a very academic dialogue of examining where queerness appears in faith, religion, and practice worldwide. So it's like, it's a good book. We're just coming from such different voices.
Yeah. Yes. That is something that I noticed as well. Do you want to kind of give a couple sentences of what this particular essay meant to you and why you felt like it was the right one for this book? Or take as many sentences as you want.
So for me, I kept running into places in my elemental practices where it would be, oh, in the north we're calling this, in the south we're calling this, in the east we're calling, In the West, may we have the motion of the ocean draw upon our spirits, right? Like it would be these places. And then I just kept having these moments where it was like, where is the place between emotion and communication? In running rituals, I was like, well, these are not clear lines. If we say, I am calling upon water to carry us forward into our emotional body, if I'm doing this between people, if I don't have both communication and emotion being wed together, if I don't have this notion of East and West finding their bodies embodied into one another, there's not a place for this between individuals or within community. And if that's the case, where does East and West meet? On an elemental level, not necessarily on a human locational level. Like where does air and water come together? Where is mist? Where is ocean spray? Where is the place that these can be without it being an analytical construct? Like, where is this on a literal level? And that's where it came from, with me running ritual and running into places where I'm like, these aren't separate concepts. Now what? And then playing, and then playing, and see what happens.
You said something in the essay about looking for the spaces where you can't tell where one ends and the other begins.
Yeah.
There was just so much in this essay where you're talking about elements that I felt like could be directly applied to the ways I, as like a genderqueer trans person, experience gender.
Yeah.
Not just gender, but gender presentation, expression, performance, the ways like sometimes I try to pace to keep myself safe. Like all of those are not different things. And it really brings in this lovely, like, we are all just extensions of the same thing, kind of animistic quality to it. That I really enjoy. But why did you specifically choose the word interstitial?
Probably because when I was having the conversation, I'd just been reading a whole bunch of stuff about the notion of interstitial architecture in the in Middle Ages construct. Like I think it's just literally that I'd been having a conversation recently about that concept. And so I was just like, oh, it's like that. And then I kept talking.
I love that.
Just be honest about it, right? Like, it's not that I had some deep and profound spiritual move. It was just that I recently had a conversation with my dad about architecture.
Oh, that's great. What other parts about this book really meant a lot to you?
Oh, so in the book Queer Magic, Ty Phoenix and I, we're the co-editors on. We each happened to have a essay in the book, but what was important to us was looking at the power of queerness and not limiting it to who was putting in an application when we put a call on the internet. Because one of the things that happens in any social media system is that the people who hear your stuff are the people you're already attached to. And so if what you're trying to do is show diversity of voices, that doesn't always work if you have an echo chamber accidentally or intentionally. And so one of the things that was really powerful was reaching out to friends of friends of friends. And being like, we are aware that we only have one Indigenous voice in this book, and that is not acceptable. Oh. And calling upon the webs of community to actually help us find the voices that are hungry to be heard. Some that were us directly reaching out, and others that were people who applied, and other people with ideas. And then the other thing that was really that I really had always wanted to do in an anthology, and I'd done it a little bit in a book called Spirit of Desire that I edited, but was to help people get their voice to be understood. A lot of anthologies that are out there want you to finish a project and then submit it and see if it fits. While to Ty and I, it was, tell us your vision. What is the thing you want to say? If you haven't had it finished, that's cool. But what we want is for you to do the thing you want to have in the world. And if that's not ready, how can we help you? And in some cases, that meant us shutting up. There was one essay that has no capitalization anywhere in it as a way that this person had, that Wolfie had been working with their indigenous history to reclaim the toxicity of forced English language rules upon them and their people, where that didn't exist previously in their language. And it was really hard for me as somebody with an academic background, as a white person, as somebody raised in the United States, to not twitch because I had my own stories about rightness. I had my own story about this. And then when Wolfie, being the author, said, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, language, queering language is one of the more radical things we can do in self-expression. And suddenly my body went, oh, and dropped in and went, I am holding on to a cisgender, heterosexual, white story of rightness. And where else am I doing that in my life? Like, Wolfie gave me in that moment this gift of shut up. Shut up and evolve. And I feel to this moment like so blessed in Wolfie being game to, I don't know if defend their choices is quite the right word, but be open to sharing why the choices were made. I feel so blessed in having had them do that. So those are some of the ones.
I love you bringing that up, and I love the like the queering of language to make more space for the hungry to be heard. What that kind of brings up for me is, I've heard a lot of people say that like they're grammar police or grammar Nazis, like in a joking way. And I'm like, no, do you know how literal that is? Like, we have used grammar and language to wipe out entire cultures. So
Absolutely.
saying something like, oh, I'm a grammar Nazi, that's not a joke. You're being literal, I feel that in my body a lot. It also comes to this classist place where like voices that aren't articulate in like a Western English way are the ones who are credible, rather than if somebody was writing in a dialect or a pidgin kind of a language or something like that.
Well, when I was doing that ritual about self-love and self-relationship, I had a group of folks that were from, I think I had people from probably six different, like their first language was six different languages. And I happened to be speaking in American English, but I said, like, as one of the pieces in the ritual is, what is a piece of yourself that you want to have more of a relationship with? This could be your own lover. This could be you as your own friend. This could be you as your own housemate. This could be you as your own coworker. What do you want? And I had people think about that, and I'm like, okay, and then what's the emotion that goes with that? If you imagine it, what is the feeling you want with that relationship? Is it love? Is it understanding? Is it humor? Is it a picture in your head? Because not everybody works in those analytical ways. Like, is it a picture in your head? And then I remember, and I don't know why I did it, but I paused and I said, and don't feel limited by English. I am speaking to English right now, but you don't have to. And somebody whose first language was Portuguese, like we went around and shared some of our words and they said this, and no one else in the space spoke Portuguese. And I said, if you are moved to translate that, if it translates at all. And they said, yeah, there's not really a word in English or German, but it's the emotion you feel when someone you care about takes care of your body, like brushing your hair, if your mother brushes your hair, that emotional sensation. And that was exactly what happened to other people in the room, was that noise you just made. Mm-hmm. But there's not a word in English for that concept. Your body, you literally just had this moment where you just went, oh my God, yeah. But in English, there's not a concept for it. And I think one of the things that ends up happening is when new words or new ideas are added, because people get so upset about this sometimes with transness of like, oh, you keep on adding new words. why can't you just use the words that are here? And the answer is there's some other person that when they hear the word genderqueer for the first time, they go, oh, and their belly drops and their heart rises and their shoulders fall backwards and their mouth even starts salivating and goes, oh, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
Or that thing you just described, that I've been looking for that since the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where part of our power can come into this is, you know, if we're talking about tarot, it's Cassandra Snow writing in queer tarot, right? Like just having these moments where it's like the fool doesn't have to be the start of the journey. The fool could be wherever the journey starts for you on this new path. And it's like, bam, oh, that, got it. But there wasn't anything like that in the discussions of tarot before that period where they start writing about it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where we start having these powers in language, is when we can start breaking out of the hegemony. I don't know, that word kind of annoys me sometimes, but like the strict rule that you were referring to a moment ago, like those strict lines that destroy possibility.
Yes, exactly. I love when people just casually drop Cassandra Snow in. They are the reason I came back to tarot after taking a long break, because I only saw the whiteness, the skinniness, the gender binary within the tarot at some point. And I was like, I don't, none of this. And then their book, Queering the Tarot, basically fell off a shelf in a witch store. And I was like, oh, this is my invitation back to this. And yeah, I'm just so, so grateful for that. And I think that people forget that we are needing new words for new things all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, we still find new species of creatures that we need to put names to. You know, so it's not just the queers, and also everything's queer, so chill out.
Oh, and yeah, no, if I were to just add two names to the roster of people that should be should be invited into this conversation on a regular basis when it comes to language and evolution and making sure we have new voices being part of it, because Jade is doing stuff similar with bringing together tarot-ness and churchiness as also being a Black queer woman, and like making and the power of femness.
Yes.
This, rather than in the discussion, the European discussion of tarot, like so much of it being white and mask. And so it's like, where is the voice of BIPOC, you know, BIPOC femmes, running the show here. And so like anytime I'm just like, here, I can't like just take my money. I can't go to 2/3 of the things you do, but just take my money already.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Because like I can't easily do some of the things around reparations, but what I can do is like say, here's $20 a month so that you can run spaces just for Black femmes that I can't show up to. Like, here, let's do this thing. And if I happen to be given the opportunity to gain some of your wisdom because you are in an open space for me to do so, fantastic. And if not, I am glad your voice is going out there and doing the work as a disabled femme, making this magic happen, because the magic happens when we actually support the places that magic happens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And you know, I'm glad that you brought Jade into it, because her work is so phenomenally unique. And I'm definitely going to put a link to some of her work in the show notes, because it definitely deserves expanding upon. I'm also thinking of Iluma Lati, who created the Black Femme Tarot. And it's so pink. It is so pink. And she created like these beautiful images of these Black femme fat crop top, like stiletto heels and platform boots, like all the things, you know? And like that was her like filling in that space. Like there was not a tarot deck that encompassed who she was, so she had to fucking make one,
right?
And it's hard, you know, it's hard to create that space. So when people show up and like you were talking about this, you said don't limit the power of queerness to an echo chamber and like call upon the webs of community. Like that is a deep spiritual practice of like queer magic makers.
Yes.
And
it's one of the things when I was, I don't remember who I was talking to a couple weeks ago, but they were saying that they didn't feel welcome in queer spaces because they didn't have the queer haircut. Because they looked too cisgender and too heterosexual, even if that wasn't their reality. They didn't feel like they could walk into these spaces because they didn't look right. And so suddenly it was this notion of, we want to have these spaces for expanding upon our identities, and yet if our expansion doesn't look right, we're not welcome in those spaces. And I mean, I say this as somebody with lots of piercings and huge amounts of tattoos and blah, blah, blah. Like I can walk into queer spaces and it's like, oh, look, you are clearly queer. You have a rainbow tattoo of a fox on your thigh, a psychedelic one. Clearly you are queer. Enter here. But I think of a lot of trans men that I know that are, you know, binary in their presentation, binary in their gender identity. They are men who happen to have a trans history and that are not always welcomed into trans spaces because they look like some other dude and they have to, you know, expose their gender history to be able to allow into spaces that are supposedly for them. And I find myself in these moments of discomfort when I am welcomed into those spaces because of external flagging in some way. Yet they who had medical journeys at the same time as me, they who grew up in similar places, they can't come in. Like I don't have to say anything and they suddenly are expected to share their life history.
Oh, that's a really good point. Which is really counteracting the whole reason we're creating queer spaces. I was talking about this with a sweetie of mine of like, we have created our own subcultures and then decided to keep people, like we're an oppressed minority who've created a subculture so that we can oppress other people and keep them out is basically
what they were getting to. Exactly. And when you're talking about like, there's not a space for me, when those spaces look mostly white, spaces look mostly tattooed, when those spaces look, insert whatever the word is here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's an event that happens here in Denver called Unabashed, which is a queer kink conference. It is about queer people and kink, and it's a conference. Like, it's very much what is written on the label. Right.
I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, this is going to be its third year, and they're expanding to a bigger space, not just because it's a bigger space and they can have more people because it was limited to like 100, 120, but because it's actually ADA compliant. And they were sick of having people who were in chairs not be able to get off the first floor of the venue elevator. And it's just like, oh, it's the only space available. Well, then let's get creative. Right. But yeah, like the very first year they had it, they hired a Black trans femme person to be on call in case anybody who needed to do a complaint of any sort, whether they were experienced homophobia, whether it experienced racism, et cetera. Like, it was somebody who was trained in that, who was hired and given money. It's like, how can we give, again, how can we give support to Black femme folks? And like, that's what the conference decided is a core value of ours. A core value of ours, since two-thirds of our board is white, a core value of ours is to make sure that we make space for people who aren't us. Mm-hmm. Our core values involve the fact that if you want to teach here and you don't know how to teach, we are doing a pre-event pedagogy 101 course so that people who have never taught get to teach. So it's not an echo chamber of literally the teacher. Yeah. Because how many times have you gone to an event and it's the same 12 people who taught at the last event, right? That, oh, you can't make it to the conference as an attendee and you're one of the following 12 oppressed populations. You're an Indigenous person from rural, you know, from rural Colorado who wants to come. How can we pay for you and put you up? Right? Like, let's actually do this stuff. And putting your... making these communities that acknowledging that queerness, being queer, is inherently political by our very existence. And so how do we leverage our politics into our identities and creation of community? And the other thing that they did that I thought was brilliant, and they've been doing them since they were online parties, is they have hired Lady Speech Sankofa, who, if anybody saw during Black Lives Matter, like during the main protests, she was the Black woman who was going up and saging the police. Like, people ever saw those photographs. But Lady Speech, who is an amazing spiritual teacher, et cetera, check them out over on Facebook, not Facebook, on YouTube. They do have Facebook, but their YouTube is their main place they disseminate information from. And they hired Lady Speech to come on and be like, set us on the right path. And the very first party I went to, that was an online one during lockdown that Unabashed held. Warning, this following little story involves a talk about sexual trauma.
Okay.
If you do not want to hear about that and you are listening, please feel forward to fast forward a minute and a half.
We also have a general content notification on our podcast saying we're going to get into all the shadowy and lighthearted things. So
awesome.
Appreciate it.
So, Lady Speech comes on in blacks and golds and a beautiful regalia of a sun over and a fan that said daddy that they were waving over their chest. And they said, tonight we are going to be exploring pleasure. And these are not the exact words, but tonight we are going to be exploring pleasure because of queer people, as trans people, as radical sexuals, we are doing profound healing work in our exact existence, right? Any sort of queer sex is inherently healing, is inherently powerful. And so I give you the following challenge. This is Lady Speech saying, I give you the following challenge slash blessing slash wish. May your sexual pleasure tonight feel the generations of your history that were sexually assaulted and had their pleasure stolen. May your pleasure tonight heal them 7 generations back. May they be healed tonight through your desire, because they didn't get it and you did. Their existence brought you to today. And then she paused and said, and for those of you who carry the ancestral lines of sexual assaulters, for those of you who are, you know, who had did come in and enslave others, may your sexual pleasure tonight take away the weight that they are still carrying on the world. May your sexual pleasure heal the traumas that they caused. May your pleasure tonight heal those wounds. And I remember going to that, and this was supposed to be like a hot, sexy, kinky, queer, people just getting their freak on, right? Like people, and like one of the rooms in this online party was like moving like every 2 hours with a different DJ, right? I was there to get my freak on and dance. Like that's what I was there for. But what was handed to me was the radical power of queer sexuality, was the radical power of healing that can come through our very existence. That literally my existence today and now in the 2020s gives me the blessing to look back to the 1800s and see which of my lineage caused harm. And I have the power to do so because of the power of my queerness.
Yes.
So yeah, Lady Speech Sankofa, check them out. I love, they are a light of my heart. I am so honored to have ever gotten to spend ritual time with them. Like, they're amazing. Like I love licking their brain. Makes me
happy. Yeah, it sounds like a delicious brain for sure. I love, well, first of all, I loved sex and quink. It's queer and kink. It's quink.
It is quink. Totally quink. Quink is the new word.
And I'm noticing that as I get older, body, my queerness more, like generally not giving a fuck about how I'm being perceived and falling into this like really delicious, like confident beginner's mind about kink and sex, if that makes, like I have completely let go of the idea that I need to look good or be good doing something, you know. Somebody recently asked me how I felt about getting older. I turned 40 last year. And like one of the things I realized was like my kinky, sexy, queer, magical, it all feels way better than it did in my 20s. Mm. And that's like very much the opposite of the common social narrative that like in your 20s, all the sex is awesome. And then when you get older, you're not a sexual being anymore. And I think that is such crap.
Yeah.
And I also realized that spirituality and kink, especially when it comes to like power dynamics that bring in like parental archetypes, is so deeply, like it's so witchy, right? Like there's so much magic and witchy and glamour and like, yeah. So I'm bringing that up because I would really love to talk about this book, Sacred Kink, that you wrote. When did you first write this book, by the way, Sacred Kink?
First edition, I want to say I wrote in 2010. That sounds about right.
Yeah, it says copyright 2009.
Okay, so that was first edition. And as a note, if anybody's listening and you have a copy of first edition and you haven't read second edition, email me. I will send you like PDFs. I am glad I wrote first edition. I am proud of second edition. It needed to exist because there wasn't anything like it. But it was it had some evolution that needed to happen. And I am glad that a decade later, I was able to have a second edition come out.
Mm. Yeah. So what is the big lesson that you learned between the two?
When you write a thing or you produce anything, whether you're a performance artist, whether you're an author, whether you're a musician, if you're a parent, period, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
You create a thing, it is created, and you can hold on to it and cherish it as much as you want, but eventually it will go out into the world and live its own life. And you mm-hmm. can't control after some time how people will use it, interpret it, etc. I learned that because the book got picked up by like universities to use as a, you know, as a resource, got picked up by like people who have profoundly different politics and use as a way to defend themselves, like some situations. And was misinterpreted in some ways. And so what I didn't think about in releasing the book was that I couldn't control what happened after it came out. And mm-hmm. so I didn't take the time to sit and think with that question, how will this be read by others? I only mm-hmm. thought about me and my immediate cohorts who needed this to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad I did it. And in the future, what I'm trying to do as I do more writing is to think the question, who else might read this that is outside my immediate pod? And so that's been one of the big ones. Yeah. And just little things like before you start talking about sacred and kink, you should define the words sacred and kink. That might sound obvious, but I didn't define sacred and kink until like the end of chapter one, which was like 40 pages long. It's something worth considering. It's defining your words before you go on expansive.
Mm.
Yeah. But like I said, I'm really proud of it. It happened because a friend of mine, Raven Caldera, who is a trans/intersex author and spirit worker/shaman who comes from a Northern tradition background, he and I were talking one day, and he had just written an essay called Understanding the Eightfold Paths to Altered States of Consciousness in Examining mm-hmm. Northern Tradition Shamanism, which is a nice, light topic. And I said to him, this is really like when we're discussing kink. I mean, it's the same different eight major routes to help people reach altered states of consciousness in their sexuality, whether you call it kink or not. And he's like, yeah, but that's not what I was talking about. And I'm like, but it is what now I'm talking about. He's like, yeah, that's not what I was talking about. And so I did what my little anxious brain does, which is I disagreed with my friend by writing a 420-page book. I have had people argue whether or not I might be neurospicy. But like, that's how I deal with stress, is that I'm like, and then for folks who can't see, I was wildly typing in midair while looking stressed. It's like when I teach classes, I'm like, and I'm not going to get to all of my content. So here are 50 more slides, and here is this. And why don't you also get a free copy of my things from two other classes? Enjoy. Because I'm also a believer that access to information shouldn't be limited by economics.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I can also like, literally the files I have of books that are out in the world, what like literally they're just sitting on my computer as files. So why wouldn't I give information to others? Because it shouldn't be limited to certain populations anyway. So yeah, where the book came from was me arguing with my friend. And by arguing, I just literally mean having a conversation, but in long form.
You know, I do a lot of prosperity magic that is about calling in clients who have lots of resources, because if I get a high-paying client that makes much more room for a pro bono client.
And yes,
I feel like queer magic shouldn't be transactional. It should be reciprocal.
Yes, yes, yes.
And yet we all have to pay our bills. So
right, and it's like when I do my intensives, I have three different levels. I have the angel level, right? You basically want to pay, basically you're paying for the, you know, it's like I've got an angel level, I've got a classic level, and I've got a support level. And I also have a little note that says like, and if support level is not something that's accessible to you, if you are somebody who is BIPOC, trans, queer, disabled, or formerly incarcerated, contact me and we can work something out, period.
Amazing.
Like, because yes. I know I can't give free stuff to everyone, but I, if you are part of those five demographics, I'm in. Like, mm-hmm. like, yeah, please. Like, how can I support you? Because, especially that last one, because there's just not enough resources for folks who literally can't work jobs anymore because they check off that little thing that says, have you ever had a felony? And people don't look at the rest of your resume.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, it's an interesting piece of like, how do we navigate this thing? And I love that you talk about, that you just mentioned this idea of inviting in those who have fiscal capacity to support the rest of your work.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, prosperity, that is one piece of it. But to look holistically at the construct of prosperity, because I am rich in social wealth.
Mm-hmm.
I am blessed in social wealth. Like, I have thousands of people who follow me online. I have people who will travel across countries to come and see me. I have people who, if I mention I'm trying to make this one thing happen, anybody have resources, suddenly a tidal wave of stuff shows up for another human in my web, right? I am very blessed and rich there. And fiscally, the world does not always hold that for me. It is certainly better than it is at other, has been at other points in my life. And the way that I find that is to say, as long as things are not against my ethical framework, I invite in those who can and do support this so the rest of this can happen. I have chosen to add that new caveat because I have had two clients for whom we had profound, and it's a really hard decision, especially for poor kids, like folks who grew up fiscally not well off.
Mm-hmm.
At least I found it very hard to tell a regular paycheck no.
Yeah.
And to have to weigh out the difference between these are my ethics and this is the money I need.
Yeah.
That required doing that work. And I've met a lot of folks who are somewhere in queer spectrums for whom they had to run away or were kicked out of their homes and had to do these dances with economics that have left some wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that then prosperity and woundedness end up woven together in queerness.
Yeah. 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 Part of being queer is definitely like you're talking about this inherent healing power of queerness, like the radical power of healing through our queerness. I feel like another level of that is healing from money trauma. You know, when I create a prosperity spell, I usually say something along the lines of, please share with me enough to take care of my family and share with somebody else or yes. another community or, you know, because if mutual aid is always working at like the bottom rung horizontal level, yes. we're not going to get another level up.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the reasons on my Patreon, like I got to a certain level and it flat out says, when I get to this level, I will hire a personal assistant who will be queer, trans, or both and give them some of this money.
Yes.
Right. And I got to the next one. I'm like, I will be doubling their hours so that they can have more money. So please support not just me, but this other human who needs money too. Early on in the Patreon, before I moved to that being the thing, it was once I hit $500, I would hire every month a different queer artist.
Oh, I love
and then
that.
I shared that imagery with my patrons. I'm like, this is a piece of artwork that would not have existed without all of you. And I think that's how we also, it becomes this piece of like supporting each other and supporting the people who are doing the work that you are savoring right now. And then put in the, and then semicolon, mm-hmm. and support sacred artists, semicolon, and support, like we just get to keep extending this beautiful possibility collection.
Mm-hmm.
Through sharing whatever resources you have artistic resources, you have fiscal resources, you have locational resource. Like, what is it? If you, when I lived in New York, it's like location, location, location. And that suddenly unabashed queer kink conference, finding a venue that they can now pay for that did hit all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That couldn't have existed without locational resources. So to look even at our own lives, and what do I have that doesn't look like, for those of you who don't have economic wealth, what wealths do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And that answer might be you are rich in home family love and your children are a bounty for you,
mm-hmm.
to be able to refuel yourself. How beautiful is that?
It's pretty fucking beautiful.
It's pretty fucking beautiful.
May I ask you first, what is the next thing you are excited about teaching? And are you going to be at Sex Down South this year?
Unfortunately, I am missing Sex Down South. Because of how much time I spend on the road, I've made a kind of a rule to myself that I do like 2 events a year where it is going and having fun, / even if I'm teaching a class, it's pro bono, like that kind of stuff. So Sex Down South is not happening because I am going to the Parliament. I'm going to the Parliament of World Religions. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing it because I'm going to be going to Parliament, where I'm super excited that not only am I doing the panel I'm on, but in the pagan only space, I'm going to be doing building rituals for your own self-relationship, like how to do some basic ritual building and cord magic made easy. But the class I have been loving that I'm teaching all over the place that I'll be doing at Dark Odyssey Summer Camp that I recently have done a number of places, but it's on determining your own risk profile. And though it originally is around discussions of sexuality, I've been discussing it on a spiritual level, on identity level, like what are the choices you're making, right? And not what are the choices, but why are the choices? Because mm-hmm. we found ourselves having these discussions throughout COVID lockdown and even today, because COVID is not gone.
Right.
But when you're calling upon the gods, what are the choices you're making and why? When you're doing tarot readings, who are you reading for and why? How mm-hmm. are we making these decisions, and what are the complexities of the social risks involved? When I'm reading tarot, or when I come out as trans, or when there's social risks involved. There's legal risks in some places. There's emotional risks. And I am loving getting to have these discussions with people all over the world around the notion of risk and reward in our faith, in our queerness, in our sexual practices. And instead of vilifying people who are choosing to have bareback sex, instead of vilifying people who are choosing to get together for, you know, queer gatherings and not masking, instead of vilifying each other, what's it like to examine why are they doing it? Why am I doing it? And what are the spaces between us that might not have to be fear-based, anger-based, et cetera? So that's been my big thing. And yeah, I'm getting to continue to travel and getting to have a lot of rich stuff, but my other joy is right now getting to be home.
Yes.
And our 2 dogs. And I just rebuilt my giant altar that takes up a 10-foot by 8-foot area and getting to reconstruct all of that in our new home together. And, you know, they're a devout Jew who's in cantorial school. I'm a pagan priest, Black priestess, and getting to have Shabbat Friday dinners where I'm doing ancestral offerings and they are lighting candles and we are breaking literal bread and having friends together and finding hybrid faith spaces. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if our internet handle is a Jew and a pagan, let's go there.
Yes. Hybrid faith spaces. I love that.
Yeah, because queerness has gotten me to be in a place where hybridity can exist. So let's do it.
Yes. Yes. Edgar Fabian Frias often uses words like slippery and mutation, and ooh. I feel like hybrid is in there as well.
Yeah. I love the word slippery, like that.
Yeah.
That works for me.
Yeah, it's a really good word. Well, one more question before we end is, what is a song that you can't stop shaking your booty to right now?
Oh, gosh. I would say Crucified by Slumberjack. It is a dear, it's part of my upbeat trance music list. And them along with Sultan and Shepherd as a band. I love Slumberjack. I love Sultan and Shepherd.
Yes. I love that song, Slumberjack's Crucify. Ah, yeah. I'm going to make a link of it and share the music video on my Patreon. There are a million other things I want to talk to you about, but we're going to end the...
Right. We can wrap it up for here and pick it back up in 9 months.
Yes.
I love yes. this.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here and trusting me with asking you all of these questions and putting your voice out into my little podcast. And yeah, I just really look forward to seeing how we show up in community together from here on out.
Absolutely. I love how we're continuing to weave back and forth in different spaces together. I look forward to next time.
Me too. A couple quick notes before we wrap up this episode. First, Ava and I have decided to pause Patreon. There are a lot of projects we have up in the air that we're juggling, and we're trying to bring all of them into more of a flow, more of a streamline, more of something that feels good to us. So make sure you are subscribed to our newsletter so you know what we have in store coming up. Also, if I mention any books in this episode, you can get 10% off that book through my affiliate link. So you go to queerconjure.org. In the upper left-hand corner, it says books. Just click on that link. It will bring you to a whole list of books I recommend from Firestorm Books. So not only are you giving me a little bit of a kickback, but you're also supporting a queer, feminist, anarchist bookstore. And what could be better than that? This has been another fabulous episode of the Queer Conjure podcast, produced by Jasper and edited by Ava. Our theme music is by Mother Marrow. Our interviews and conversations are recorded via Zoom and published through Podcaster's Spotify. You can listen to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and find out more at queerconjure.org. Blessed be. Mwah.